Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Today, we bask in the light of mustachioed greatness. Hi, this is Daniel Segura, host of the Mustachioed Podcastio. You like mustaches? You like movies? You like sexy chinganos? Well, the Podcastio is the place for you. We are talking legendary mustaches from Charles Bronson to the Great Burt Reynolds to the OG Ice-T. Find the Mustachioed Podcastio anywhere you listen to podcasts. That is Mustachioed Podcastio.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to another episode of the Identity Podcast on the Podmoth Media Network, your foray into the weird, wonky, and sometimes downright spooky. This week, I present to you a haunting tale by Bernard Capes, entitled The Thing in the Forest, published in 1915. The story is told by four men, Raven, Duxbury, Scarrat, and Harriet, who travel from village to village sharing their tales. The Thing in the Forest is presented as one of Raven's stories. So join me on a quest through the dark and sprawling mountains of Hungary. You may just come face to face with something otherworldly. The Thing in the Forest by Bernard Capes. Raven speaks. Into the snow-locked forests of Upper Hungary steal wolves in winter. But there is a footfall worse than theirs to knock upon the heart of the lonely traveler. One December evening, Elspeth, a young newly-wedded wife of the woodsman Stefan, came hurrying over the lower slopes of the White Mountains from the town where she had been all day marketing. She carried a basket of provisions on her arm. Her plump cheeks were like a couple of cold apples. Her breath spoke short, but more from nervousness than exhaustion. It was nearing dusk, and she was glad to see the little lonely church in the hollow below, the hub, as it were, of many radiating paths through the trees, one of which was the road to her own warm cottage, yet half a mile away. She paused a moment at the foot of the slope, undecided about entering the little chill, silent building, and making her plea for protection to the great battered stone image of Our Lady of Succor, which stood within by the confessional box. But the stillness and the growing darkness decided her, and she went on. A spark of fire glowing from the presbytery window seemed to repel rather than attract her, and she was glad when the convolutions of the path hid it from her sight. Being new to the district, she had seen very little of Father Rule, as yet, and somehow the penetrating knowledge and burning eyes of the pastor made her feel uncomfortable. The soft drift, the lane of the tall, motionless pines, stretched on in a quiet like death. Somewhere the sun, like a dead fire, had fallen onto opalescent embers, faintly luminous. They were enough only to touch the shadows with a ghastlier pallor. It was so still that the light crunch in the snow of the girl's own footfalls trod on her heart like desecration. Suddenly, there was something near her that had not been before. It had come like a shadow without more sound or warning. It was here, there, behind her. She turned in mortal panic and saw a wolf. With a strangled cry and trembling limbs, she strove to hurry on her way. And always she knew, though there was no whisper of pursuit, that the gliding shadow followed her in her wake. Desperate in her terror, she stopped once more and faced it. A wolf. Was it a wolf? Oh, who could doubt it? Yes, the wild expression of those famished eyes, so lost, so pitiful, so mingled of insatiable hunger and human need. Condemned for its unspeakable sins, to take this form with sunset, and so howl and snuffle about the doors of men until the blessed day released it. A werewolf, not a wolf. That terrific realization of the truth smote the girl as with a knife out of the darkness. For an instant, she came near fainting, and then a low moan broke into her heart and flooded it with pity. So lost, so infinitely hopeless. And so pitiful, yes, in spite of it all, so pitiful. It had sinned beyond any sinning that her innocence knew, or her experience could gauge. But she was a woman, very blessed, very happy, in her store of comforts and her surety of love. She knew that it was forbidden to succor those damned and nameless outcasts, to help or sympathize with them in any way, but there was a good store of meat in her basket, and who need ever know or tell? With shaking hands, she found and threw a sop to the desolate brute, then turning, sped on her way. But at home, her secret sin stood up before her, and imposing between her husband and herself, threw its shadow upon both their faces. What had she dared? What done? By her own act forfeited her birthright of innocence. By her own act placed herself in the power of evil to which she had ministered. All that night she lay in shame and horror, and all the next day until Stefan had come about his dinner and gone again, she moved in a dumb agony. Then driven endurably by the memory of his troubled, bewildered face, as twilight threatened, she put on her cloak and went down to the little church in the hollow to confess her sin. "Mother, forgive and save me," she whispered as she passed the statue. After ringing the bell for the confessor, she had not knelt long at the confessional box in the dim chapel, cold and empty as a waiting vault, when the chancel rail clicked and the footsteps of Father Rule were heard rustling over stones. He came, he took his seat behind the grating, and with many sighs and falterings, Elspeth avowed her guilt. And as, with bowed head, she ended, a strange sound answered her. It was like a little laugh, and yet not so much like a laugh as a snarl. With a shock as of death, she raised her face. It was Father Rule who sat there, and yet it was not Father Rule. In that time of twilight, his face was already changing, narrowing, becoming wolfish, the eyes rounded and the jaw slavered. She gasped and shrunk back, and at that, barking and snapping at the grating with a wicked look, he dropped and she heard him coming. Sheer horror lent her wings. With a scream, she sprang to her feet and fled. Her cloak caught in something. There was a wrench and a crash, and like a flood, oblivion overswept her. It was the old, deaf, and near senile sacristan who found them lying there, the woman unhurt but insensible, the priest crushed out of life by the fall of an ancient statue, long tottering to its collapse. She recovered for her part, for his no one knows where he lies buried, but there were dark stories of a baying pack at night, and of an empty, blood-stained pavement where they came to seek it for the body. That's it for this week, dear listeners. Tune in next time for more tales of the creepy, weird, and paranormal. Until then, stay spooky. The Identity Podcast is brought to you by host Janine Mercer, and the music was created using GarageBand. Find The Odd Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Identity Pod, and on Facebook as The Identity Podcast. A transcript of this episode will be available at theidentitypodcast.wordpress.com. Got a paranormal experience to share? Send those along to theidentitypodcast@gmail.com. If you liked what you heard, please take a moment to mash that subscribe button and leave me a 5-star review. And don't forget to tell your friends, family, and coworkers about this podcast. Every little bit helps. This episode contains no ads or sponsorship. The books in which this story is contained was digitized in 2007 by the University of California, San Diego, with funds from the Microsoft Corporation. This work is presented for free for the benefit of anyone who wishes to hear it read aloud. The digitized copy can be found via a link in the show notes.